23 minutes after 9 o'clock. Now, President Cyril Ramaphosa is currently chairing his two-day cabinet lehotla, which kick-started in Pretoria yesterday. The aim of this lehotla is to look at issues of unemployment, attracting investment and growing the small business sector. It's an opportunity for the President, the Deputy President and Ministers, as well as Directors General from the government departments to meet and strategize on government's priorities. Of a critical importance is, of course, also how we function within the SADC community. We can't be the only performer in a sea of underperformers. And one of the issues that is likely to come up is, of course, whether South Africa should throw Zimbabwe a lifeline. Now, of course, we've had different versions of whether we are or not giving them a lifeline. The Minister of Finance saying we are definitely in conversation with them. His spokesperson, Jabulani Sikhakhani, contradicting him, saying we just don't have the kind of money Zimbabwe is asking for. Well, two people who have written really interesting arguments about why it's important for us to get involved in this is Mr. John Dludlu. He's a Business Day columnist and former newspaper editor. Mr. Dludlu, welcome to the Karima Brown Show.
Hi, Karima. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And then our second guest is Catherine Grant. She is the director of Tutwa Consulting Group. Catherine is an experienced trade negotiator and a trade policy expert. Ms. Grant, thank you very much for joining us on the Karima Brown Show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Mr. Dludlu, let's start with you. You have argued that it is important for the South African government to actually throw that lifeline to the Zimbabweans and the government of Mr. Mnangagwa. But we've also seen quite a lot of repression in that country. And the big issue is also always been the conditionalities around which we give a loan. Make the case for our listeners on why you think it's important that we give them the lifeline.
Thank you very much, Karina, for inviting me and the opportunity. First, let me declare a personal interest. I was raised by a step-grandfather who came from Zimbabwe. So I would have a very personal interest in the issue. That's the first thing. The second thing that I want to make clear is that my support, my call to the President of South Africa to assist Zimbabweans is not a call to prop up the repressive regime of Mnangagwa, because I'm also mindful, even though it was not mentioned in the article, I'm mindful of the fact that Mnangagwa is part of what went wrong in Zimbabwe, especially from the 80s, the mid-80s. He was part of the Central Intelligence Organization that brutally repressed and led to the killing of many people. So I'm not talking about the individual. I'm talking about assistance that's directed at the people of Zimbabwe, the ordinary people of Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
We do know, however, that he did win an election. And the highest court in Zimbabwe also upheld his victory. So what I'm saying is, I'm saying that the assistance must be conditional. It must be not unconditional. It must come with terms. He has lost. By not winning, if you look at the margins of the voting, the party won quite a decisive victory, but he did not win a decisive victory. So that's a statement of the people of Zimbabwe about him. And it must also be something that is directed, a message that's directed at how he came to power. We can't ignore all those circumstances.
John, I get that, but make the economic case for why South Africa needs to assist Zimbabwe. Talk to us about what implications the implosion of the Zimbabwean situation and particularly its economy will have on South Africa inevitably.
I think all this, up until now, we have only looked at the influx of Zimbabwe. The influx of qualified Zimbabwe. If you look at the banking sector in South Africa, what constitutes employment equity candidate. So I have to withdraw that. So what constitutes black representation, black African representation, is made up of the bulk of Zimbabweans. That's a statement about the quality of their education, but it's also a statement about the fact that they don't see opportunities in their own country, right? And there is another issue, which is how the South African economy has grown during the last 10 years, 15 years, right? It's not grown as high as would be expected, because we just haven't been doing business in Zimbabwe. And there are huge, there are many companies, the mining sector and the banking sector, which is hugely invested in Zimbabwe. They haven't been able to get their money out. So this has direct implications about growth in South Africa.
Okay, let's bring Catherine in here. Ms. Grant, you arguing that the MDC Alliance is targets closer links with regional bodies. Now, of course, we're all talking about greater intra-Africa trade. We're all talking about, you know, taking the barriers away that prevents us from doing trade, cutting the red tape and so on. Make the case, the regional case, the SADC case, for why it's important for us to integrate Zimbabwe. You're writing from the MDC Alliance's point of view, but they're not in government at the moment. So how do we take their initiatives that they've put on the table to a ZANU-PF government?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the very obvious answer is a geographic one about the importance of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe sits right in the middle of the North-South Corridor, which is an initiative for growth of the region that has been championed by South Africa. And the reality is that the moment that there is an uncertainty in Zimbabwe, that the unrest we've seen in the last few weeks, that corridor becomes unusable, really, from the point of view of trade links, of transport. So we've already seen diversion of trucks, of the traffic that was going through Zimbabwe to alternative routes in the last few weeks. So that's a very sort of obvious geographic argument, that if we are going to push for ensuring that we have infrastructure links that run north to south on the African continent, Zimbabwe is critical. I think there's also a point about the credibility of arguments that South Africa and others in SADC have been making for many decades now about considering us as an expanded market that is appealing to investors, to traders, because we're all small economies in Southern Africa in the global scale. And so we do have to join together if we are to attract high levels of engagement.
Yes.
And even South African companies, you know, there's a very strong, just a bottom line reason for making sure that Zimbabwe functions. We currently export, well, in 2018, we were exporting just less than 30 billion rands worth of goods to Zimbabwe. That's not insignificant. We want to keep their trade going, because a lot of it's in products that actually create jobs here.
John, do you agree with Catherine?
Yeah, I agree completely with the thing. 30 billion rand is low. And if it were there before the implosion began, we should be far. We should be at around 60 billion rand at least. That's the first point. The second point that I'm making is that for us to work in South Africa, for us to become to help the president achieve his goal of 1.2 trillion rand of investment, we have to have a working Zimbabwe.
Yes,
but it can't be business as usual, as his two predecessors have done. We have to explicitly know. So I was reading the ANC's manifesto. It talks about a very interesting concept. It's called progressive internationalism. To me, what it means is, it means that if we are going to place human rights at the front and center of our foreign policy. We can't have a hush-hush deal with the Zimbabwean government.
Mm-hmm.
That talks not only the ZANU-PF, but it allows human rights. It was so ironic and unfortunate that the president called for the sanctions to be removed as the government was killing its own people in Zimbabwe.
Let's come back to some of the issues around Zimbabwe's current trade flows and also the serious problem around currency. Catherine, you make the argument that it would make sense for Zimbabwe to seriously consider pegging its currency to the rand. Now, of course, it's actually at the moment pegged to the dollar. And, you know, it's very difficult for people to understand how people actually pay for things in Zimbabwe. Peter Thornycroft was on the show a few nights ago trying to explain the different ways in which people can talk about it. But what would be the advantages of pegging the currency to the rand?
Well, there would be two advantages. One is that there is currently a very complex, as you say, parallel set of currencies being used in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
They don't just use the US dollars, they use electronic versions called RTGS accounts. They use these things called bond notes, which have been printed in Zimbabwe itself. And so any decision that does away with that complexity, I personally argue is a good one. The benefit of going to a rand-based system, of joining something like the Southern African Common Monetary Area, would be that South Africa is Zimbabwe's biggest economic partner currently. And if you are struggling to find the money to pay for inputs, to pay for the things that you need to grow your economy, then it just makes sense to do business in the currency of your biggest trading partner.
Yeah.
We've seen this, for example, being mooted by many countries in the world who are moving to using the Chinese currency.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same level of logic. The shortages of currency in Zimbabwe, in a very simplistic way, stem from the fact that they have not been earning enough money to bring foreign exchange into the economy. What they do earn is often actually denominated in rands.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you're explaining the reality that Zimbabweans are facing all the time. You make a broader point, though. You're talking about a Southern African approach, a SACU approach to dealing with Zim. What would the other Southern African countries have to bring to the party for this to work? Because surely South Africa can't carry all the responsibility.
That's exactly right. And I actually think that that's something that I would advocate for right now, is that if South Africa was seriously considering actions to assist Zimbabwe, that it should be done in a collective way.
Yeah.
Whether that be with our SACU partners, which would be required legally if, for example, Zimbabwe did want to actually join the customs union or even the monetary area. But also, I think, just because we can't go this alone. You know, this is decades of the erosion of the economy in Zimbabwe. And I think for fixing it, it's going to require a whole range of partnerships, not only from Southern Africa, but beyond as well. And I think that's actually, for me, what would be more important right now in terms of a South African response than simply handing over some cash, which I think would disappear into a black hole at this particular point in time.
John, your view on the currency crisis. I mean, when I spoke with Peter Thornycroft, she was actually saying Mnangagwa went to Russia to try and get foreign currency. Now, I know Duma Kubule, an economist that we could get hold of tonight, we wanted him to join this conversation, is arguing that we should help out at that at that end. Do you share that view, and if you do, what is the logic of the argument?
Okay, so I have a slightly different view from Catherine, which goes something like the following. Our neighbors, we compensate them as part of the SACU, Southern African Customs Union. That's BLMS countries, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, right? I don't think they are in a position to give anything at this moment. Together with Catherine Dota, we're working on another paper which says basically that you have to integrate those countries.
Yeah.
The latest iteration to this paper
talks
about Zimbabwe, how to include Zimbabwe in the CMA, the Common Monetary Area, right? But Zimbabwe can't
John, before you continue, do you mind just speaking straight into your phone? Because what's happening is that we're getting you clearly at some points and then at other points you're fading. So if you could just adjust your phone so that we can hear you clearly, please.
Okay, I hope it's better now.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is Zimbabwe can't come into the Common Monetary Area, which is the BRLS countries, without paying something into it. Zimbabwe has misbehaved.
Mm.
Zimbabwe must be actually punished. The loss of economic sovereignty is just a small part of the price that they have to pay. But I'm completely in favor of the integration of the region of Southern Africa, at least those countries that are ready, starting with the BRLS countries, should move forward.
Okay, but let's get real, guys. John and Catherine, let's just get real. If one looks, for example, at our relationship with Zimbabwe Airways, I mean, we are actually carrying the cost. I'm not sure when last Zimbabwe actually paid for fuel to fly up and down. I mean, it's the real situation is that we have actually already carried the cost. The conditionalities is very important. John, you spoke about, for example, Zimbabwe misbehaving. Now, if you dealing with a government like Mnangagwa's, whose response to people's unhappiness over price hikes is intimidation, arrests, beatings, disappearances, then the conditionalities need to be really, really important and they must be complied with. Catherine, what do you believe ought to be the conditionalities? One, if we bring them into SACO, and two, also, if we peg the currency to the rand and we assist them with foreign currency. I mean, there can't be a blank check, can there?
No, there definitely can't be a blank check. And it's quite challenging, this question, because you're getting very much to the heart of the fact that this is both a political challenge and an economic one.
Yes.
And as we well know, the politics are very complex, they're very violent, and they are not necessarily open to engagement from outside parties. That's very clear. That is manipulated highly in the Zimbabwean narrative when there's a sense that others are trying to interfere. So the politics, I would say there's well-known conditionalities that have been put out by many commentators, such as return to the rule of law, reforms of certain legal provisions and so on. But I think that if you're trying to get real, as you said, Karima, in the short run, perhaps we need to think about really the economic conditions we put on money.
Yes.
And there I would be looking at how we can also leverage the South African private sector a lot more effectively in these debates. Because the truth is that while Zimbabwe may owe some money to state-owned enterprises from South Africa, the real economic leverage point we have is our private sector that's been engaged there for many years, and that sit there employing many Zimbabweans, that sit there with the potential to actually be earning foreign exchange in some ways from Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really want to see a conversation happening in South Africa between the government and business again about these conditionalities, what they could look like, what is the role that could be played by the private sector as well.
Absolutely. John, your last thoughts before we close up the conversation.
Yeah, Karina, so what I've argued for is that I agree completely with Catherine. However, Zimbabwe needs help today, not tomorrow. So joining SACO is a long-term solution.
Mm.
You've seen what has happened with Brexit. It's now back to square one, right? We're going to take as long. The current regime of Zimbabwe needs to know that it has lost its economic sovereignty and needs to know that very. So here are my two conditions. My two conditions is that the terms of the guarantee that I've argued for must be made public. At least minimally they must go through Parliament. So this is a serious departure from the old approach of the two predecessors of the current president. And I think he needs to stand with the people of Zimbabwe, the ordinary people of Zimbabwe, not with the regime.
And of course, if we put it through a public process here, which means that it's backed by a multi-party process, it's not something that the ANC and ZANU-PF can kind of negotiate in private. It is actually something that is subject to transparency in South Africa, but also transparency to the Zimbabwean people. I think that's a very, very important and crucial point. John Dludlu, former editor as well as guest columnist at Business Day, and director of Tutwa Consulting, Catherine Grant. Thank you so very much for your contribution. Some very interesting views there on why it is important, not just for South Africa, but for the SADC region to, in fact, assist the people of the Zimbabwe, conditionalities and all, and that the South African economy is not one that can function in a sea of underperformers.